Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 176, recorded September 2, 2013.
All right, greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello, hello. So, today we have several people.
Quite a group.
Cool show.
Yeah.
We have Matt in Perth, in Australia. We have Bob in Boston, but not the same Bob in Boston.
This is Dr. Bob.
This is a Dr. Bob in Boston, so now we have two Bobs in Boston.
Yes.
So, Tony in New York, and Juliet in Paris, Tom in Provo here in Utah, Roger in Maine, and Mick in Cornwall.
Yes, so.
Start off with Matt.
Okay.
He had some technical suggestions for the audio, I think.
Yes, and I implemented one. I implemented his main suggestion last episode. So if you were listening with headphones and noticed that we were getting more balanced audio out of the ear each year, then let me know. Or if not, let me know. But I tried to implement his suggestion. Hopefully it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you're listening with one headphone, you should be able to hear both of us
right, easily.
He
also says he has an update on the pondfish in his aquarium. He says, they seem to be in shock that their tank water is so clean, unlike pond water, which is murky usually. Kidding aside, I'm enjoying being able to see them more frequently.
Yep. And it should be only a month or so before they go into their pond.
Oh, right, because they're going into summer, huh?
Yeah.
Because they're on the other side of the world.
Well, most of Australia is mild enough that you could, in terms
probably,
of, it doesn't get so cold, so you could do ponds a little bit differently than we would here, but anyway.
Okay, so our new Bob in Boston, Dr. Bob, he says, on a recent trip, I listened to several of your recent podcasts and found them to be full of great information. I have, therefore, subscribed.
Thank you
very much.
We always appreciate that.
He says, I currently have two nano tanks, one with a Beta Splendens Delta and a Nerita Natalensis Zebra.
Zebranerite.
Oh, okay. I'm like, that sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And a local saltwater tank with local species that uses natural saltwater. That's cool. The local tank has two Pagulus longicarpus.
Mm-hmm, those are hermit crabs.
Oh, okay. Two Littorina littorea.
And that's a kind of snail.
Okay. For Crangon septim spinosa.
Those are shrimp.
And a mating pair of Fundulus petrus. Ooh.
Yeah, that's...
Sorry, I butchered that one.
No, that's a kind of killifish.
Okay. He says, I also have several live rocks with Balanus balanoides.
That is a barnacle, I think. Pretty sure
barnacles.
That's a barnacle. Yeah.
I check water chemistry weekly and do 25% water changes weekly. I feed using a combination of microvert, brine shrimp, and flake foods. Everything I have done so far has been guesswork since I have found very little information about keeping local natural seawater tanks with local species. I know that my locally collected water contains many planktonic organisms, but I don't know which ones. I have found species-specific information about the locals I keep, but nothing on keeping and maintaining them in an aquarium. The local fish stores are of no help. Are there resources of which you know?
Well, I might try NANFA.
What's NANFA?
I always forget exactly what the acronym stands for, but it's something like North American Native Fish Association.
Oh.
And that would be my first thought.
That's a good
try
idea.
Try that out. Because I know that some of the people in there are going to be keeping
some
saltwater set up. I would check that out. I've done that. I mean, we did that.
We did it in Hawaii.
In Hawaii, which is a little different because it is tropical anyway. But
right.
It was fun. We collected our own saltwater and you know, we collected some of our own organisms and it worked well. And it was pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
To do. We just did approximately 30% water changes every week.
You could walk to the beach from where we live,
yeah.
So made it easy.
That would be my first thought. Hopefully that helps, because I don't know a whole lot about keeping temperate marine organisms around here. I know that a lot of them don't do well long-term without a chiller, from what I've read. Wet Web Media, actually, check out that, too.
Wet Web Media?
Yeah, wetwebmedia.com might have some good resources.
I wonder if the other Bob in Boston might have any ideas of local resources, too.
Yeah, if any of you do, then please let us know. But those are some things that pop into my head.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hopefully that helps a little bit.
Okay. And welcome to the show, too, and for writing in your first time.
Welcome.
Okay, so Tony in New York, he says, I have a tank full of juvenile killifish, 12 or so in a 20-gallon. All the fish are vigorous and active except for one. That one fish seems to have one eye popping out and is lingering at the top of the water. The fish's other eye seems normal. I am trying to figure out what could be wrong. I tend to do a 20% water change on this aquarium once per week. Sometimes I change 40%. I checked the parameters today and found zero ammonia, nitrites, and nitrates, so that should be okay. The pH is 8.2, normal for my water. The tank has no filters, so there's a fair amount of debris in the water sometimes. Not sure if that is an issue in and of itself. Otherwise, the tank has two air stones and plenty of Java moss. The affected fish does eat when a pellet floats by, but does not seem to be his usual cheerful self. I'm considering whether I ought to remove the affected fish and quarantine him separately, or treat the whole tank in case the other fish are secretly in trouble. I know that the Java moss will probably tolerate some salt and heat if I raise the temperature. I've read plenty on Popeye, but the advice varies wildly. Some suggest tuberculosis, and others say that if it is just one eye, it may be only an injury. I'm contemplating the pet fish talk recommended treatment, but wanted to know what you think. Let me know if I should add some spinach to the tank for Popeye straight away, or pursue another course.
Okay, well, what I would recommend is get a magnifying glass and look very carefully at the pectoral fins. And if you see tiny anchors tattooed on them, then add spinach. Otherwise, I would go the quarantine route. And this is the reason. Well, Popeye, of course, is a symptom, but it can be a symptom of so many different things. As Tony mentions, it's really hard to tell just from the fact that a fish has a Popeye what's causing it. But I would quarantine the fish and see how it does. I've had fish with Popeye. It just turns out to be an injury, and it heals, and it's fine. And, of course, I've had that and find out that it is probably mycobacteria.
Okay.
So I would just quarantine it. And I don't think that I would use the recommended treatment in this case because, well, for a couple of reasons. One,
what is the recommended pet fish talk treatment?
They turn the temperature up a bit and they use quick cure. And
what's that?
It's a fish medicine. It deals with a lot of parasites and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And they also add a bit of salt to the water, aquarium salt to the water. Mm-hmm. And that can help with a lot of things. You know, it's sort of a broad spectrum shotgun treatment that can deal with a fair number of issues. But if it is tuberculosis, it won't help. It might help if it's an injury, actually. Mm-hmm. But you know, I would just say be on the safe side and quarantine it. And actually,
should
I emailed Tony.
Should you be doing the warmer and salty thing in the quarantine tank?
I mean, that's a possibility. That's a possibility, and that could help too. And when I emailed him, he said he is quarantining it now.
Oh, okay.
And so, well, I would say the salt.
There weren't any anchors tattooed, huh?
I guess not.
Yeah,
it's too bad. That would have solved the problem very quickly if he'd done something like that. Okay. Well, yeah, so he's working on that. Well, hopefully, we'll hear good news.
Okay.
Good luck, Tony.
Okay.
Keep our fins crossed.
Who do we have next? Juliet. I haven't heard from a while, so hello again, Juliet.
In Paris, France.
In Paris, yes. She says, still listening faithfully to every show, even if I haven't had the time to write. Appendicitis. Nice vacation surprise. Oh, not really. That's no fun. I'm sorry you had appendicitis. I hope you're better. Or maybe that's what's giving you time to write, because you're in bed. I don't know. I hope you're better, though. My shrimp are now down to a population of 5 juveniles that were hatched before the adult population petered out. We will see if we can get this lot nice and big and breeding without too much trouble this time. As you know, I have a 5-gallon nano for the shrimp with a lot of moss, anubias, and some very sad-looking Java ferns that never seem to grow. There's only about a centimeter of gravel on the bottom, and not only is it covered in debris, mostly from disintegrating catalpa leaves, but the whole tank is swamped with algae from hair algae to blackbeard. The moss is full of it, the filters, one small mechanical one and one sponge, and heater are covered with it, so are the walls and stones. Now, I feed these guys very little, and the light period has been reduced to about 6 to 8 hours max, and the tank is far from the window. I'm racking my brains trying to find out what is causing this, and I'm convinced that this is possibly also why I have shrimp die-offs now and again. Apart from a few pond snails, there's no one else in there. I do a 10% water change once a week, but I notice that often after a water change I have a dead shrimp or two, so I'm getting a bit paranoid about them, especially with only 5 shrimp left. Some shrimp guys say I should have much deeper gravel or special soil, ADA or similar. Is it ADA or is it ADA? Did I mess that
it's
up?
It's ADA.
Okay.
I think most people pronounce the acronym that way.
Already.
Yeah.
With more stem plants to help clean it all up. Some tell me, on the contrary, that I should have very little, as it helps combat gas buildups, etc., in the soil. Some say that specialized nanosoils are poisonous to shrimp. Others say they are best as they lower the pH and make the plants grow well. Some tell me I should absolutely add a little water conditioner to the tap water and let it stand a day before using it. Some say I shouldn't add any because it might have dangerous chemicals for the shrimp, and that I should just let the tap water stand a day, and that is quite enough. I have, by the way, also combined tap water with RO, but nothing changed, so I went back to tap, which is easier. What do you think? Deeper gravel, different soil, water conditioner or not, and why is there so much algae? My 20-gallon is also full of algae, though not as bad, and there are only 5 endlers, 2 autos and 3 monos in there, and they are fed a speck of fish food and occasionally blanched lettuce. What is feeding sparingly, if that isn't? By the way, the shrimp get two minute shrimp pellets every 2 days and a bit of blanched lettuce about once a week, a square inch approximately. The snails deal with what they don't eat. Maybe this is in fact a banquet? Maybe this is polluting everything? In the old days, I had a betta and a thriving colony of red cherries that got up to 50 in the same nano, and the kids would overfeed all the time. Nobody died, so what's going on? This is so frustrating. I have kept and bred everything from amphibians, reptiles, birds, and fish with no problem, but the shrimp are getting me down, and I really like the little fellows.
You know, I emailed Julia to ask some follow-up questions about her water parameters and about some other things, because one thing it made me think of was that there could be water, you know, we're pretty sure from what we've talked with Julia about is that there's some funny things about her water. Mm-hmm. When she does too big of a water change, there are problems. Mm-hmm. So I was asking her about that and seeing what she could find out. And she ended up, I asked her about the nitrate readings in her tap water as well as her tank water. And because she doesn't seem to be feeding much, but the plants are obviously getting a lot of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I also asked about the catapa leaves because they, as they rot away, are releasing nutrients in the water. Probably not enough to account for this mm-hmm. whole business. And it depends on how many of them there are and so on, how much that accounts for what's in the tank. But that could be something. And so I asked her if her municipal water company offered details on the composition of the tap water, thinking about iron or phosphate or, you know, something like
those
that in addition
things.
To nitrates. And I did also mention that I tend to agree with the shrimp guys who suggest fairly deep plant-specific substrate. I use, you know, 2 or 3 inches of Seachem fluorite or fluorite mixed with gravel in various tanks, and the shrimp thrive on that, so it's obviously not toxic to them. And a lot of stem plants and or floating plants to suck up excess nutrients.
Excess. Yeah.
And it works very well. I use the Seachem Prime water conditioner, but I've also used PetSmart's tap water conditioner, I can't remember what it's called, and Tetra brand and Jungle brand and others,
the
no ill effects
really
on the shrimp. All of those on shrimp have been fine, so I don't think that they're particularly toxic to them. And I wouldn't recommend just letting it sit for 24 hours just because it does little to nothing to combat chloramine, even though it handles chlorine. Chloramine can sit there a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you use the conditioner?
Which is why I use the conditioner, yeah. And for other reasons too, but. And I also mentioned that with the algae thing, that you can use Flourish Excel with shrimp, and it does fine. It appears to actually harm the algae.
What is it that you
need to
do?
To use some Flourish Excel, Seachem Flourish Excel.
Oh, okay.
Because it can help with the algae, but by helping the other plants out, feed the algae as a carbon source, but also it actually harms the algae. So,
that's nice.
Suggesting that. And it makes iron in the system more available to plants as well. So, if iron is an issue.
And they can soak it up so the algae isn't using it.
Yeah, it could help with that. And she said her nitrite test, the only thing she had on hand was a nitrite test, and that's zero, so that's good.
That's good.
And she said she's trying to work out what the water was like, but the guy that she talked to only knew that it was a pH was around 8.
Hmm.
And that there's not very much iron in it, but he didn't have any information about phosphates.
Hmm.
And shrimp, I mean, 8 is fine for
It's fine for shrimp.
Mm-hmm. And he said she's working with Flourish Excel, but she said it didn't do much as well as it's done in the past. She said it worked better for her in the past, but not now. And then she also realized that she's thinking about the light. The photo period used mm-hmm. to be longer than it is now, and that could have done something, and the algae could have kind of been
She's reduced
that.
That
she's reduced it. And she said she changed the lights, the fluorescent lights in the tank.
Uh-huh. What did she change
them to? She said they're now plain white ones, and they used to be the more reddish spectrum ones, and she's wondering if that might be the problem, changing
and
to these new bulbs.
Which one is closer to sunlight?
Well, it depends, because we don't know really the spectrum by the color necessarily, but she may be talking about like around 6,700K for the white ones, and the reddish ones might be a lot lower than that. Some of the plant light bulbs are quite a bit lower. I might be wrong, but it seems somewhere around 2,800, 2,700.
So maybe the light is better for the algae, but not so much better for the plants?
Could be. And she also wondered how high you can dose Flourish Excel without poisoning the shrimp. I have done the maximum dose on the bottle without any problem. I haven't tried going any higher than that. But I have done the maximum dose on the bottle and not killed the shrimp. So hopefully that maybe she's been able to switch her lights and see if that's made a difference. And
did she switch it back to what it was before, the red
one?
She
hasn't yet, but I'm wondering if she has done so far. Hopefully she hasn't. Maybe something that we've talked about
has
been
helpful. It works.
Yeah.
So much problem with the shrimp.
Right. So best of luck with that. Hopefully the light change helps.
Good luck. Okay. We have Tom and Provo next. Except actually, let's go take a break
first.
Is it
time for a break?
Yes. Go make some popcorn. Go to the bathroom. You know, break things.
Or just fast forward the break.
Yeah,
or whatever.
But
whatever you feel.
We'll be right back. Okay, do you have your popcorn?
I don't.
Did you go to the bathroom?
I'm not going to talk about personal things like that on the podcast.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay.
Alrighty. Tom and Bro, he says, glad both Kelly and the podcast are back this week. You guys are amazingly consistent, something that cannot be said of many other podcasts. Well, thank you very much. It was nice to be back, and we try to be here for you guys.
Yeah, we do. And we appreciate your appreciation of our consistency.
Yes, we do. So, Tom says, speaking of consistency, now that I'm dosing daily with Flourish Excel, my planted tank is doing well and algae is retreating. Yay!
Ooh,
I solved the problem of the frog bit being pounded by the hang-on-back filter by running a piece of transparent monofilament fishing line across the tank about half an inch below the surface and a few inches from the front. The line is held in place by small magnets attached to each end and corresponding magnets on the outside of the tank.
That is a good solution. Mm-hmm. I like that.
The frog bit now stays nicely in front of the line and beyond reach of the filter. That was a good idea.
Really good idea.
Well, the algae problem is better and the plants look healthy. Their growth rates are not impressive. I have been considering do-it-yourself CO2 to see if that would speed plant growth and further reduce algae. The plan was that if do-it-yourself seemed to work as I hoped, I would move to pressurized CO2. After listening to Aquarimax number 4, that was a long time ago,
yeah, it was.
In which you talked about do-it-yourself CO2 supplementation and also poking around the internet, I have some questions. I have a question too, which is something that you should consider if you are considering doing do-it-yourself CO2.
Which one?
Are you married?
I think, yes, he is.
And does he wish to stay? No, I'm just kidding. It's stinky.
It is stinky.
And it's ugly.
Yep,
so if you have a lovely stand or shelf that closes, that you can put it in, then from the viewpoint of somebody else who also lives in the house, I'd say go for it. Unless this is your office tank, and then you can do whatever you want, because who cares what your students think when they come in, right? No, students are lovely. But it's stinky and it's ugly.
Yeah.
Those are the caveats that I have about do-it-yourself CO2.
Okay, it's good to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox. My CO2 box. Okay, these are his questions. First, is it... excuse me, that was not a question. Try that again.
Okay.
Okay. is a 36-gallon tank too large to be treated effectively with a yeast-based reactor? The systems described in the podcast, one or two bottles, seem to be for 10 or 20-gallon tanks. Would I need 3 or 4 bottles for a 36-gallon? Perhaps I would save myself time and trouble by going directly to a pressurized system. For a seriously planted tank, I'll probably want one soon anyway. Okay, let's do that question first.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, a 36-gallon is a little on the large side. Not that it can't be done. There are people who do it. I've heard of people doing up to 55-gallon tanks with do-it-yourself CO2.
That's a lot of soda bottles.
But it is a lot of soda bottles. You need to
get your toilet really clean because, you know, you don't actually want to drink the soda. Right? It's gross. You just buy, like, the generic store brand Coca-Cola, and you pour it in your toilet, and you let it sit there, and it eats off the hard water stains and stuff.
Okay, this is personal experience. We've done this before.
Yeah, yes. Because, again...
Because we don't drink soda.
We don't drink soda. It's nasty.
And, anyway, well, we have done that. If you get a couple of the 2-liter bottles, is it 2 liters or 4 liter? What's the size? I can't remember.
The size that you used to use?
The big ones.
2 liters.
Okay.
I don't think they sell soda in 4 liters.
I think they do, like jumbo ones. I don't know.
That's
I've seen them. But if you get a couple of, like, 3 or 4 bottles on a big, you know, you can make some more CO2, but it's not that efficient with a 36-gallon tank. I would say it's possible, but not very efficient. You probably would need 3, maybe 4 bottles for a 36-gallon.
It takes up so much space.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of space, and you probably have to restart a bottle every week, basically. Instead of waiting 2 weeks, you'd have to restart one of the bottles every week. And you would save yourself time and trouble by going to a pressurized system. And, you know, if
maybe
you were serious about it.
Maybe for that size of tank, it's better anyways.
Yeah, it's going to be easier in the long run, and actually cheaper, eventually. I mean, the initial purchase is going to be a lot more, because you can set up a DUI system for...
Not very much.
The pressurized CO2 system is quite a bit more expensive, but in the long run, you only have to, buy a cartridge every 6 months or something for a pressurized system, where with a DUI system, you have to, buy the sugar, and you have to buy
the yeast initially.
Eventually, you have your own culture you don't have to worry about, but the protein powder and all that stuff, it eventually adds up. So, I would say that's another vote for the pressurized CO2 system. It says that with a hang-on-the-back filter, you need to keep the water level high enough to prevent excess surface agitation. However, I read a post on one of the aquatic plant forums in which the writer firmly opined that either with a high hang-on-the-back filter or an airstone in the tank, CO2 supplementation would be a complete waste of time because the CO2 would be returned to the air as fast as it was added. Is he right, or are you? I'll bet you are. Well,
my money on Rust, too.
I thank you for the vote of confidence. I would say that with an airstone running in the tank, you're going to blow off so much CO2 that it's pointless. I totally agree. However, I have run plenty of do-it-yourself CO2 systems with a hang-on-the-back filter, and as long as I keep surface agitation to a minimum and the water is flowing directly out into the water column rather than flowing from up above down into the water column, that it works fine.
So it's not... splashing into the water.
Right. It's going directly straight out from the weir.
It is released when it's already under the water.
Yes. Then it works. It works fine. I've seen the results. Dramatic increase in improvement in plant growth. And I'm sure we're losing a little bit of CO2 from the surface, but you're going to do that anyway, no matter what you do. You will lose some CO2 at the surface. It's impossible to prevent some loss, but it doesn't matter. You get enough that the plants are happy.
But it still works.
Yep. So, yeah, it's not a complete waste of time, although with an airstone it would be.
Alrighty, but the hang-on-the-back filter should be fine.
As long as you're careful to make sure that it does as I described.
Okay. He has a third question. He says, third, what, if anything, might I need to be adding to the water besides Flourish Excel? Fertilizer, trace minerals?
Okay, that does get...
That he's meaning, like, if he does the CO2, what else does he need to add?
Right, because as soon as you add CO2, and CO2 is no longer limiting... other things in the environment become limiting. Light might become limiting. In his case, probably
limiting
not.
As far as plant growth goes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, like, they have enough CO2 to grow, but they're missing something else to keep growing like you want them to grow? Is that the idea?
Let's say, just to make it simple, and this is totally... I'm just throwing numbers out here to make it simple as an example.
Okay.
Generalities. Let's say you get a 100% increase in plant growth by adding CO2.
Okay.
Right?
But they don't have enough of another...
Now, yeah, they're still going to be able to grow at a certain rate faster than they were before. But now maybe they're going to run out of iron.
Because they're growing so much faster, they're using it up faster.
Right, or some other nutrient.
Okay.
Yeah, and so...
I get it.
Yeah. So you're going to need to start boosting those, and you can get to a point where you will increase plant growth even more, or you'll get to a point where the plants will actually start having deficiencies.
Because they're growing too fast with not enough nutrients.
Right, but they'll still grow, and it can be either their growth will slow, or it will reach a certain point, or where they can't go any faster, or they'll actually start getting sick.
Okay.
So, yes, you will have to start dosing something. It depends on your substrate. I can't recall what substrate you have right now. But let's say you have a nutrient-rich substrate like fluorite, for example, or EcoComplete.
Okay.
You probably won't have to worry a whole lot about trace elements because they'll be in there. But macronutrients, you almost certainly have to dose some.
Macronutrients like?
Like potassium and nitrogen and phosphorus are the biggies.
Okay.
And iron's pretty big too, but that's technically, I guess it's a micronutrient if I remember correctly. Anyway, those three, some of them you may or may not have to dose depending on your fish load and how much you feed, all that kind of stuff. If you have a fairly decent fish load, it seems like he does in that tank. He may not have to dose nitrogen at all, or phosphorus, but he'll almost certainly have to dose potassium.
Okay.
And he may or may not have to dose...
Can you just get those as like liquid supplements?
You can. You can. And I've done it a couple of different ways.
I'm guessing you didn't throw a banana in the tank.
No, I have never thrown a banana in the tank, at least not on purpose. But I would say... That's something you want to do some more research on, too. But some people do the PMDD, the poor men's dosing drops. That's a great thing to Google, poor men's dosing drops, and find out all sorts about things about that. And, you know, several people have asked us to do a show on fertilizers. We need to do that sometime.
Okay, let's put it on the list.
Yeah, we need to do that. But I would say the simplest thing to start out with, assuming you have a nutrient-rich substrate, which will provide iron and all sorts of trace elements... You'll probably want to think about dosing potassium because that tends to be limiting in a situation like this. Yeah.
Okay.
And you can get that most of the just fertilizers, aquarium fertilizers that you get at aquarium stores, like Flora Pride or Seachem. They have a Seachem potassium you can get, which I've used and I like.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Most of them are potassium and some of them have iron and a few more trace elements added. And you can try dosing with that. According to the package directions, see how your plants do. A lot of times, if you have a nutrient-rich substrate and you have do-it-yourself CO2, that will be enough. And the plants will be fine as long as you're dosing that every few days. If you're going really high-tech, really a lot of light, and you have a lot of plants in there, sometimes you have to go more than that. I'll tell you, my highest-tech tank right now, which is not very high, I have done higher tech tanks in the past.
Can you get that out? That's hard to say.
Right now I'm running one on slightly more than 3 watts per gallon of compact fluorescent light. It's 20 gallon, the one with my dwarf quarries, or pygmy quarries, in it. It's a medium tech tank, I guess you'd call it, because it's got, a fair amount of light on it. And it's got some stem plants, quite a few stem plants that are growing fast, and then it's got crypts and javelin and anubias and other slow things growing in there too. But it's got a lot of Rotella indica, and it's got some frog bit, things like that in there. So I'm just dosing it with Flourish Excel every day, and I dose it with potassium in the form of Nusalt, NU-SALT, which is, a potassium chloride. Salt substitute.
Mm-hmm. Like table salt substitute.
Yeah, just in small amounts. It seems to be working well. I'm not having any algae issues. The plants are growing well. And since I have the fluorite, in the substrate, I don't have to worry about dosing a whole lot of other things. And it's working okay. But I'm not going for the really high doses. Mm-hmm. There have been times in the past where I also had to dose trace elements in the tank, even with an enriched substrate, because everything was growing so fast.
And you had so many in there.
Because I had higher light or I had, things going on like that. So, yeah. But I would say that's the first step. And if that's not working for you, you'll need to look into some other things. Do some research on estimated estimated index and things like that to find out what your dosing regimen should be.
Okay. He has one more comment for us.
Okay.
Which I really like.
Okay.
He says, my final comment is that it has become clear, as I have searched the web for RO water, CO2 supplementation, and plant lights, that there is an entire other audience, perhaps larger than Aquarius, for these topics. I'm half expecting to be questioned by the DEA based solely on my search patterns. But if they come for me, I'll look them right in the eye and say, the fish is with me. These aren't the plant lights you're looking for.
I love that.
I love it too.
So hopefully those of you who don't know Star Wars will now go watch it.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode.
Are there people who don't know Star Wars?
I don't know. But if not, they need to watch episode 4 just so that they'll understand that reference.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I've noticed that too, doing some research into various things.
That's very interesting.
Hydroponics, you know, any kind of high-powered LED light, you know, sometimes you run into some interesting...
a little bit of a different crowd.
Yeah.
Maybe they swap brownie recipes.
Yeah, that kind of crowd.
Okay.
Just, yeah. So not the plants you're looking for. Move along.
Okay, Roger in Maine. Have we heard from Roger before?
Roger's new.
Welcome, Roger. Okay. He says, dear Russ and Kelly, I just wanted to tell you guys how much I enjoy your weekly podcast. It fills a void left when the Bailey brothers decided to retire their show.
Yep, I still feel a pang of loss whenever I think about that.
And he says, I must say, at first I wasn't a big fan of your podcast. There were many audio problems. Yes, there were. And I was still getting used to a new podcast. But I am now a loyal podcast subscriber.
Well, thank you, Roger, and welcome aboard as an Aquarimaxer.
Now, hopefully the audio problems will continue to be weeded out.
Yeah.
It's still, I don't know, this new place that we've moved it, the way that the room is set up, it's echoey.
It is.
And there's not really anything we can do about it.
Not right now.
Because the ceiling is high and we can't fill it.
When we get the someday we'll have the field recorder that we can plug in and record without having to listen to that fan. So
yeah,
that
the computer's very loud.
Yeah.
He says, also, do you think it would be possible to get either Tom or Nevin as a future phone guest? That would be killer. That would be pretty neat.
That would be killer. I would like to do that.
Do you think they would be interested in doing that since they're retired?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I would love to do it. But, you know, I contacted, when they were running the podcast, I had contacted them numerous times. I don't know exactly how many times, but a number of times, and communicated with them. You know, they would respond back and forth communication, no problem. But then... once the show stopped, I tried to contact them a couple times and nothing.
They just didn't write back, or the email address came back like it's not working? Or
I just didn't hear back from them at all. So I don't know if they've just cut that off, or it's just those email addresses don't work and they have new ones that they will use somewhere. I don't know.
You should check their website again.
I need to check their website again. It's been a while
since they've
been back
on. Because they're still selling fish, right?
Yeah, yeah. The website's still up and they're still selling. So
we will work on that.
Them. And I don't know if they're interested or not, but if they are, I'd be happy to have
really
them
neat.
As guests.
I'm sure we can go over all kinds of different topics.
Yeah.
Send us a list of what you guys want them to talk about in case we can get a hold of them.
Yeah. So thank you, Roger. It's a good suggestion.
Okay, we have one more. Mick in the UK. He says, I have attached a picture of the gravel scoop I use when changing substrates in the shop. It's a reptile scoop, but works great for taking gravel out and letting water through. Just do a good gravel clean to get as much debris out first.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just realized I need to interrupt for a minute. Because Pete emailed us back. Because this is in response to Pete.
Mick's comment was?
Yes.
I was wondering, so like, this seems like a conversation that I wandered into and I don't know what's going on.
And I put that in the wrong place, so can we backtrack and go back to
Okay,
Pete?
Not the last one. Cyber Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He says... And he did put his location in it after that. He says, Pennsylvania, but Cyber Pete is fine with me. I like Cyber Pete too. I will call you Cyber Pete. You are dubbed and christened Cyber Pete. Okay. I do have some swords and Java ferns. Your assumption was correct, Russ, of wanting more plants. I do want many plants. I think your idea of opening the bag in the water is great, and that's what I'm going to do. Why do I need to clean the old gravel, as you said, if I'm just taking it out? And can I do the entire tank, or will this mess up any good bacteria? Also, I have two angelfish if my tank is planted enough for hiding places. Can I put it in cherry shrimp?
Okay.
Like, sorry, there was not a comment in there and I just read it straight, so. Okay. If I have two angelfish and I put in hiding spots, can I put in cherry shrimp?
Cherry shrimp, okay.
Okay, so those are our friends.
Let's go back to cleaning the old gravel. Okay. It's going to be less messy. I think your water will be a lot less messy. So
is he switching plants out? I don't remember what happened.
I think he already has swords and java fern that he's planning on keeping, but he's going to put in new substrate so he can add out a lot of other plants.
So he needs to clean the gravel before he... Oh, because he's taking the gravel out to put in new substrate.
Yeah, he wants to put in the enriched substrate, like fluorite or EcoComplete or something like that.
So is he going to use the gravel for anything? Is he just throwing it away?
He's just taking it out. I don't know if he's going to use it or not, but he's removing it from that tank. And I would say to clean the old gravel just so you don't make as much of a mess.
Clean the gravel as in gravel vacuum it
gravel
before,
vacuum
you, take
it before
it
you remove
not,
it?
Not like take it out of the tank and wash it.
Right.
Okay.
Clean it
that,
in terms of...
That
no, that's
I,
an
that
important distinction.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. It's an important distinction. And I would say if you vacuum the gravel before you clean it out, the water's going to be less messy, so that's less stress on your fish. And also, if you happen to have any anaerobic pockets in the gravel, and you disturb them all at once, that can
that's
be disastrous.
So if you vacuum it, it gets that crap out.
Yeah, like you vacuum a quarter of it one day, another quarter of it the next day, another quarter, you know.
So not even vacuum it all at once.
Maybe not. And then and then take it out.
Okay.
And so Mick does have a good comment relating to how to remove the gravel
so
a little later.
So this is the gravel scoop comment from Mick now.
Yes.
Sorry, guys.
Excuse me.
We tend to have me read these cold because then I react better to them if I've already read them. Then
it's good.
Yeah.
I think it works better
that
way.
But sometimes it gets messed up.
That's okay. And I wanted to say that if you do the entire tank, yes, it's possible to do the entire tank. Will this mess up any good bacteria? Yes. It's going to kill a number of good bacteria that are on the gravel. If you have a happy culture of good bacteria going on in your filter media, shouldn't be that big of an issue, as long as, say, you have a bio-wheel type filter where you can remove the pads completely and you still have the wheel that's got the bacteria on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have water that you're kicking up and you're going to fill your filter pads full of gunk and then take them out and rinse them and those are the only things you have bacteria growing on, that could be a serious problem for the tank. But as long as you have, you know, some sort of fairly permanent fixture as part of your filter where the bacteria can reside, then it should be okay. You'll have enough bacteria that should be able to carry on. But if... does that make sense? Basically what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
Well, I'm hoping so. Okay. Yeah, that it will mess up good bacteria, but if your bed is stable and you're going to have bacteria somewhere in the filter that are going to remain largely undisturbed during this process, that it will be okay, even if you're going to lose the ones in the gravel. Right. And for his last question, he has two angelfish. If his tank is planted enough, has enough hiding places, can I put in cherry shrimp? Well, you can certainly put them in. I don't think very many of them will survive.
Even with the hiding places.
Right. The hiding places may help a little bit. And I have put, you know, I mentioned this on other podcasts, that I have had cherry shrimp reproduce in tanks where there are cherry shrimp predators because there are enough hiding places. So it can happen. But one thing, angelfish are specialized to prey on organisms about the size of cherry shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And they will relentlessly hunt them. So
it probably wouldn't be the best idea.
I don't expect that any of them will survive, honestly. And maybe if you're really lucky, a few of them will. But there you go. So
probably not.
Probably not the best match. I have had angelfish in tanks, put baby angelfish in tanks with cherry shrimp, and then I don't have cherry shrimp anymore in that tank.
Wow.
So, I did have some in a 55 for a while, and a few of them managed. It was very densely planted.
And it was big.
And there were only a couple angelfish in there. So, it's not going to be the most successful venture out there.
Alrighty. So, thank you, Cyber Pete.
Yes, thank you indeed.
And we can do the rest of Mix now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says, after several weeks hiatus, shrimp news.
Oh, but we wanted to talk about what he was saying, right?
Oh, yeah, but did we not?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, what he was saying about his...
I'm on a roll today.
No, it's fine. He says, he uses the gravel scoop to change substrates in the shop. It's a reptile scoop. And what a reptile scoop, it looks like a cat litter scoop, basically.
Like it's slotted?
But instead of having slots like that, most of them have screen. There are some that have slots too.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But most of them have a screen base in the bottom. So you pick that up and the water just all runs out and you've got the gravel in there.
You can take it out.
Yeah. It's used for going through sand, basically. Like
in a leopard gecko tank,
you can scoop the defecatorium out.
Defecatorium.
Yeah, which is a great word, meaning leopard gecko litter box.
That's pretty fancy.
Anyway, so it's a good way to do it. I'm glad that Mick brought that up. I think that's a great solution.
So is the picture up on the Facebook page?
Actually, I think it didn't come through. The attachment didn't, but I'm sure he can attach one.
Okay.
We can see if we can find one. But basically, if you go
looking again
at reptile sand scoops, if you do a Google search for that, if there isn't one up on the web page by the time you hear this, then you can look one up there.
Okay. Alrighty.
So, great idea.
Let's go back to his shrimp news. Okay. I can finally announce that my white pearl shrimp numbers are climbing steadily. I am now convinced that it is down to the large clump of Java moss that I put in a couple of months back. A greater amount of natural food, and get ready, Kelly! Oh, okay, I'm ready! Ready? Surface area! For them generally in the tank for living in.
What was that last bit?
I'm trying to figure that out. For them generally in the tank for living in.
Oh, yeah, that's what they have more surface area now.
We've got more surface area.
Yeah.
Okay. The tank before had little plantings, but a few lava rocks and some small bogwood pieces. So now as the moss has grown, the shrimplets have blasted and started growing on well, too. I have some crayfish updates, but as I am emailing from work, don't tell the boss. I won't. I will save it for next time.
Okay, well, yeah, that'll be interesting to hear about some crayfish.
Yes, and thank you for letting me fulfill my job on the show.
Being able to...
Surface
her! There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we
I was
were
glad
just
to hear that
discussing
work.
A t-shirt about surface area.
Yeah.
Here's a
design idea. We have a picture of Kelly and a little call-out balloon where it says surface area, and at the bottom of the shirt just says aquarimax.com, and on the back it has the surface area song, the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a little button you push and it'll sing the surface. No,
no, it doesn't have a button.
No, all the rest of it was true, though.
Okay.
I think it would be a cool shirt.
That would be fun. I like the idea, too, about where it just says, ask me about surface area. I dare you.
We're going to do that one, too.
Yeah. Okay.
So, well, it's great to hear, Mick, that your shrimp are surviving, and Java moss is, once again, a miracle worker.
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. And, yeah, I think that's about all for this week, isn't it?
I think that's everything, although we actually went a little over, but hopefully you guys will forgive us.
Yeah, it's okay, because we missed that one week, so.
There we go. So you get,
a couple weeks ago.
You know. 13 extra minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.